You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
We acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country, and we respect and value their past, present and ongoing connection to the land and their cultural beliefs. The chalice, as a symbol of Unitarian Universalism, arose as a beacon of hope in an atmosphere of tyranny. The chalice arose as a sign of promise, a sign of promise that the marginalised world would neither be forgotten nor ignored, because they are beloved and precious from the perspective of the holy. Today we remember all the people who've been told explicitly or implicitly, through police violence or government policy, through derision or dehumanisation, that they're anything less than whole, anything less than beloved. As we light our chalice, may we make our lives a beacon, a symbol of our promise to draw the circle wide, a sign that we will not rest until all means all. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. My name's Jenny Dyster. I'm currently the lay leader of this spiritual community. You might have noticed that the sign outside calls this building Unitarian House rather than Unitarian Church. While our service follows a typical Protestant format, the content is humanist rather than Christian. Although some Unitarians were born into this faith, many came to it later in life. Some of these seekers left the faith tradition of their childhood, while others came from no faith tradition at all. It is for many people a refuge for a stage of their lives, and they move on, and others are stayers. Our Unitarian heritage calls us to recognise the inherent good of all persons. You are welcome in a Unitarian congregation, whatever your gender identity, sexual orientation, racial identity or class. Today's service will address the identity and function of Unitarianism and what the future may hold. After the service, you're welcome to stay for tea, coffee and conversation. The Celtic world developed a profound sense of the complexity of the individual. One of the components of an individual is problematic for some Unitarians, and that is the soul. I've chosen this reading because it probably describes a definition of the soul that Unitarians have mostly discarded. And it discards it too, and goes on to explore a more ancient concept of the soul, which you might find more inspiring, particularly if you're less a logical positivist like Marie Curie, and more an imaginative quester like Albert Einstein. This is the reading, and it's from John Donoghue. The body is in the soul. We must learn to trust the indirect side of ourselves. Your soul is the oblique side of your mind and body. Western thought has told us that the soul is in the body. The soul was thought to be confined to some special, small and refined region. It was often imagined as white in colour. When a person died, the soul departed and the empty body collapsed. This version of the soul seems false. In fact, the more ancient way of looking at this question considers the relationship of soul to body in a converse way. The body is in the soul. Your soul reaches out further than your body, and it simultaneously suffuses your body and your mind. Your soul has more refined antennae than your mind or ego. Trusting this more penumbral dimension brings us to new places in the human adventure. But we have to let go in order to be. We have to stop forcing ourselves, or we will never enter our own belonging. There is something ancient at work in us, creating novelty. In fact, there is very little needed in order to develop a real sense of your own spiritual individuality. But one of the things that is absolutely essential is silence, and the other is solitude. We will now have a time to go within, a period of silence, which I'll signal with the chime at the end, and then follow that with the interlude. So we'll have silence first, before the chime and the interlude. And cast your eyes down, or close them if you prefer. Church attendance declined throughout the 20th century, turbocharged by disturbing events like World Wars I and II and the Vietnam War. In the 21st century, COVID wreaked further damage on what was left. Look around. Clearly, God allows awful stuff to happen and cannot be relied upon to step up to save the right people. Except the Unitarians, if they believe in God, have never believed in that sort of God. So how come worldwide Unitarians seem to be heading down the same plug hole with the rest of mainstream Christendom? One might assume in an environment like ours, a democracy, people might appreciate a church that embraces diversity and allows adherents to choose their own paths, shape their own beliefs. Well, in the spirit of inquiry, let's start with Says Me, whose blog begins, "What drives me nuts about Unitarian Universalism?" Before I go on, I just want to say that I consider myself a Unitarian as far as general beliefs are concerned, and I appreciate where Unitarians come from. I support Unitarianism in general, and I appreciate what they're about, but unfortunately I have to nitpick. My apologies in advance, dear folks. Now, when I was a kid, I endured a lot of Lutheran services that went something like this. Come in, talk to each other, sit down. Stand up, sing something from the hymnal. Sit down. Listen to a sermon. Or just fall asleep to it. Watch some ceremonial thing happen while listening to something instrumental being played on the organ or the piano. Stand up, sing something from the hymnal again, end of service, leave. Repeat ad nauseam every Sunday until one becomes bored to tears with the whole church thing. When I first started attending my first Unitarian church, I was enthralled. Wow, a hymn about astronomy. Hymns that quoted Buddhism, amazing. Even atheists could attend. Gotta respect that. Then something started bugging me after several months, I'm not sure what. Eventually I just quit going to the Unitarian Church or any other church. Something about it seemed too much like the stifling boredom I experienced in church as a kid. It made me sad and I didn't know why. He goes on to contrast the typical UU service with a rocket-powered, happy-clappy vineyard church service and suggests that Unitarians update their style and clap and dance and sing their appreciation of Charles Darwin, Hawking, and Carl Sagan. Well, I thought to myself, that's a quick way of removing the remaining butts on seats at Norwood. I mean, if you want to go dance and sing, party. Go to the Gov. Besides, that style, not substance. And while to argue that a change of style is necessary, that we should move away from the classic Protestant order of service, for example, is a perfectly reasonable proposition, isn't it? But moving on to Happy Clappy isn't. I moved on to the next ex-attender's opinion. The writer was 64, born and raised a Unitarian, but like many, drifted away from regular attendance in his mid-teens, despite having no quarrel with the major principles and values of the church. He wrote, "I recently started dating after a divorce and came across a UU minister who was also single. She explained the diversity of her church, including New Age people and pagans. I always felt the principle that we use reason to interpret the world around us was one of the stronger components of the Unitarian belief set. I would consider New Age spiritualism and paganism to be too herpy-derpy to even apply reason to figure out where they fit in the world. Have Unitarians become too tolerant of silly things like this? What's next? Astrology? I know we're supposed to be tolerant of all, but when we compromise reason in favour of tolerance, we end up with mental mush. What do you think?" Well, I think it's tossing the baby out with the bathwater. And any lay leader or minister has no business labelling the beliefs of others herpy-derpy when we state every Sunday that our aim is to support each other on any path that helps us to lead a better life. Freedom, reason and tolerance was a slogan that carried more weight in the days of Catherine Helen Spence, when conventional churches were more concerned with sin and salvation and imposed many rules and restrictions on their parishioners. In the modern context, freedom has been besmirched by those who invoke it to deliver hate speech or bear arms. Tolerance is deemed not far enough when embracing diversity, and reason, well, that's in the eye of the beholder. So the seven principles have superseded the slogan that worked so well for hundreds of years, and the seven principles are directed toward helping us embrace and extend freedom, reason, and tolerance and work toward a better world. They're still there, but they're explained more. Anyway, I had enough of reading the opinions of disaffected American Unitarian non-attenders, so I skipped across the Atlantic to Judith Evans, who was lured into the Newington Green Chapel by the sign outside announcing that it was the birthplace of feminism. Well, that's a slightly outrageous claim, but the chapel could back it up. Mary Wollstonecraft spent three formative years there when Stoke Newington was the epicentre of dissent. Judith Evans was intrigued by the lack of creed, the claim of incorporating influences from the world's great religions, from art, politics, and the political sharpness seemed to match the aggression of the religious right. The church at the time, that's Newington, was conducting no legal weddings until full marriage was available to all couples. She found their political conviction and openness about it inspiring, but asked, to what extent can the religion of everything and nothing inspire the spirit? And she wasn't a fan of the free-thinking hymns. Forward to the future in unending, sung to the onward Christian soldiers, it's in our old green hymnal, didn't like it. She appreciated the lack of coercive piety, but missed the awe, ritual, and the glory of ancient church music, and left wondering, can shared political belief provide a substitute for the shared out-of-this-world high provided by religious conviction? So, that's the US, that's the UK, let's go to Norwood. We have flirted with political action. We restricted ourselves to banners, public statements, and not refusing to conduct marriages until equality was granted. We didn't go that far. And we don't sing Forward Through the Ages to the tune of Onward Christian Soldiers anymore. We cherry-pick the old green hymnal and have largely moved on to more modern songs like Blue Boat Home or our opening number today, and to Rejoice and Come In. We've also updated our interior. There it was, And in case you need a picture, there it is. We have resisted New Age with a relentless emphasis on the positive. We don't have a joy candle. We have a candle of joy, concern, and insight. We continue to embrace the shadows, which was the subject of Nicholas Rundle's address last week. Or have we? I'm not sure that we address evil or sin. We are in agreement, I'm sure, that the Christian Calvinists overdid sin, especially original sin. But do we have a way of coming to terms with really messing up, making awful decisions, doing things that lead to horrible consequences? This is something people struggle with. Guilt, shame. Forgive yourself and move on is just glib. But do we have a roadmap for dealing with that really tough stuff, or even understanding it? What if there really is an afterlife? What does death mean? Unitarianism does not come up with a rich web of stories like Hinduism, or a set of beliefs like Christianity, or a fertile mythic tradition for imagining an expanded life. What drove the 19th century Unitarians when they ditched supernaturalism, when they bravely pioneered a radical departure from our Christian roots, was a passionate desire to create a better life. And if you look at the seven principles which were formulated in the 20th century, you see this. In the 1950s and 1960s, the spirit of liberal religion did not compare in relevance, excitement or moral clarity with the spirit of liberal politics. Think of Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat on the bus and Unitarians following outraged black leaders into the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King. The success of this movement was followed by success in championing other marginalised groups, gay people, backing marriage equality. In all this activity, though, Unitarians increasingly became identified with the left and causes, and our beliefs became indistinguishable from generic social and liberal ideologies. Why does that matter? Well, why bother with church? You don't need Unitarianism to make the world a better place. Go join an activist group, climate action, social housing, justice for refugees, transgender rights, whatever. Secondly, in order to find spiritual practice and answers to ontological questions, we really have to turn to the wisdom of other traditions for poetry, stories, and rituals. Now, in Adelaide, we have tried hard to acknowledge and honour the spiritual side. We are not a political club. But we struggle with the religious side, and I wonder how much support we really give people in times of their greatest need. We admire diversity, but we don't achieve it. Anyone looking in sees a predominantly white, well-educated bunch of liberally minded bods. Nice manners, mostly. Well-dressed. Decent haircuts. Mostly. So where to from here? It seems to me that we either work on diversity and relevance to the next generation, which probably means making our services less churchy, finding different ways to explore our spirituality, ministering to the needs of people outside the leafy green suburbs of Adelaide, Mount Barker maybe, or west, south, or north of the city. Or alternatively, we could accept that growth in religion in the contemporary world is a feature of conservative denominations, not liberal ones. Intellectual spirituality like Unitarianism has little appeal for people looking for clear answers and divine help. It has a stronger appeal to the privileged. The spiritual but not religious folks don't need church. They have yoga. They have the internet. Transcendental meditation. Deepak Chopra. Oprah Winfrey. Who needs us? Well, we do operate like a spiritual way station for many people. I've noted in my quarter of a century here, people coming in for a while as they escape from conservative religion, or after a breakup, after a death, or as a way of returning to religion after years of neglect. And then they find a new partner or a new faith, a new sport on Sunday morning, and they stop attending. That's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? Being a sort of spiritual stepping stone for seekers. Unitarianism offers many opportunities for exploration and for giving time and money, but it does not demand much of its members. Now, academic studies show the more a religion demands of its members, the more committed the members will be to that religion. Life, said Malcolm Fraser, wasn't meant to be easy. Islam teaches the path as a razor edge of a sword stretched across an abyss. Jesus talked about the narrow way that few entered. Hinduism has stories about how many lives you have to live to get it right. And the Jews, being the chosen people, means less that they're special and more that God sets a very high bar for Jews. We don't have a distinctive understanding of the human condition, but we do have curiosity, awe, and wonder about life in our world. What if, instead of focusing on bringing more people in, we focused instead on healing and growing the relationships of people who are already here? Instead of stretching ourselves beyond our practical capabilities, we cut back and focused on doing fewer things better. All things have their day. What if Unitarianism has had its day? What do we do for people we love but will lose? We cherish them. We grieve, but we deepen our connections in the time we have left. We consider what will be our lasting mark on the world. Now, I'm sure there are other alternatives, and when we get our new minister, we may be able to explore our identity, our role, and the future anew. The important thing is we have options. Growth is one. Accepting small as beautiful is another, or morphing into something else and allowing the young to lead the way is yet another. May we profit from the journey and not fret too much about the outcomes. We leave this gathered community, but we don't leave our connection, our concerns, our care for each other. Our service to each other, to the world, and to our faith continues until we are together again, friends. Be strong, be well, be true, be loving. And those were the words of Cynthia Landrum.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.